Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
On 95.7, The Game.
It is our final hour here. Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Matt Kolsky's out today. Joe Butcher Boy Shasky is in this afternoon. And we're very happy to begin our 5 o'clock hour here on 95.7, The Game with Adnan Virk. He is the host of Change Up on DAZN, his podcast. Cinephile is a must if you're a movie fan. And Adnan, it's a pleasure to have you on here. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, fellas. Hope you're doing well in the city by the bay. We're hanging in here in North Jersey, and hopefully we'll get some baseball back and sports back in general.
Yeah, the big news for the Giants today is that they're going to consider using cardboard cutouts of season ticket holders, I guess, for shots behind home plate or behind the dugout, something like that. In order to have social distancing, do you expect to see players just sitting in random seats in the stands and not in the dugout? It looks like that's part of the plan this year.
I'm going to deal with that as well. Because you know what? If you're supposed to be social distancing and there's no fans anyways, then yeah, why are you going to stay in the dugout? So it'd be an interesting image, I imagine, when the camera's panning and you see all the Giants, for example, not in the dugout, but just sitting in the stands and lounging and kicking back. And listen, it's going to be unusual. There's no doubt about it. There's lots of things that will take adjusting and acclimating, you know, notably the fact that obviously pitchers aren't going to be hitting. And as you mentioned, cardboard cutouts, maybe crowd noises in there a little bit. All for it, man. I mean, there's literally two ways to look at this. One is, God, this is miserable. This isn't the sport I remember it. How many guys are going to test positive? How are we going to do this? And the other option, which I have embraced, is, hey, let's just give it a shot. And let's just cross our fingers and pray everything goes well and try to take it for what it is. This is an atypical baseball season, and hopefully eventually we'll get back to our normal lives, whatever that is.
When you say atypical, though, it's hard to come up with a lot of things that are actually going to be the same. Is atypical sort of a code word for you won't recognize it?
Not necessarily. I mean, listen, you should have the essence of the sport. It's balls and strikes. It's home team, visiting team. It's just going to be weird in that the lack of noise, I think, certainly impacts atmosphere. And so many players get so much juice from the fans. You know, listen, I think if Yankee Stadium, 2 strikes, the fans are all on their feet. You know, obviously in San Francisco, great crowds as well. That part of it, I think, will be missing. And we'll certainly feel devoid. But in terms of the baseball, no, I think it's going to be all the players that we think of. They're going to have some great moments throughout the season. It's just going to be odd. Like when a guy gets a big home run, they're not going to have some crazy celebration at home and nobody can touch each other, nobody can spit, nobody can spit tobacco. But the one issue with the rain that I do think it could be typical is this. This is pure speculation. As you guys know, teams are going to travel back to us. Rosh, and after 2 weeks it goes to 28 and then 26 2 weeks after that. And there's going to be at all times this taxi squad of 3 players traveling with the team. One of them can catch, one of them can probably play any position, and then somebody else. What I wonder is this, and again, I'm just throwing this out there. If all of a sudden you start to see a rash of COVID, if, you know, increases in spikes, as we're seeing in Texas and Florida and Arizona continue, could you see an example where 6 Diamondbacks, for example, are out with COVID for tonight's game? But boom, we got 3 guys in the taxi squad and 3 other minor leaguers nobody's heard of. Meaning, baseball will happen, but it may be atypical in that all the stars we're accustomed to seeing, perhaps if they get waylaid due to COVID or because of the spread of this virus, it may be players we're not as accustomed to seeing. But again, there's no minor league baseball. So there certainly is a lot of resources available and players available. If Major League Baseball opts to go that route and just says, let's get the games done, even if it's not the stars that we're accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, that will be interesting. That'll be absolutely fascinating to monitor, especially from the Giants prospect perspective. I'm curious, Adnan, I've been asking everybody this question, and I'll ask you. For my money, it's Fernando Tatis Jr. That's the guy that I want to see every single at-bat. I want to see every inning in the field. That's the guy I want to see. Who's the guy Adnan Virk can't wait to see in 2020 for Major League Baseball?
Well, I like him because there's always, that's your personal bias, and I went to the Baseball Writers Association of America dinner. I was there on behalf of MLB Network with Heidi Watney, and I got to bring my eldest boy, Yusuf, who's 12 years old. But by the way, he was born in San Jose because, of course, my wife is from the Bay Area. And he's a huge baseball fan. And the two guys that were the nicest to him were Pete Alonso and Cody Bellinger. Alonso was tremendous. I told him, listen, Yusuf struggles with velo. He's a good hitter, but he really struggles with velo. And Alonso said, hey, no problem. Alonso goes, tell him to lift weights. And my boy is he's tall and skinny, so I don't know if really weightlifting is where it's at for a 12-year-old, but we'll get him going on that. And Bellinger was great. Bellinger told him, don't worry, kid, I hit like one home run my entire high school senior season. Look, I'm the MVP right now. So two young guys that I love because they were nice to my son, Pete Alonso and Cody Bellinger, specifically in the National League. And then, of course, because of my ties growing up in Toronto, I, of course, love that young Blue Jays nucleus. I can't wait to watch more of Bo Bichette and Vlad Jr. and Kevin Biggio. And I hope the Jays can make some noise. Because I think, and you guys would agree with this, listen, the Giants are not going to be contenders per se, but I think if they've expanded the playoffs from 10 teams to 16 teams, you start to feel like, you know what, a three-game win streak can be huge and a three-game lose streak can be calamitous. So I don't think San Francisco is going to win the division. But we all agree L.A. at 37 wins, as funny as that sounds to say, 37 wins are expected to win the division and be the best team in the National League. But I do think it opens it up for more teams. And I do think that, you know, if I'm a Rays fan, I feel pretty good because the Rays pitching staff 1 through 12 is great. And I think you're going to see situations where this is not the usual, hey, starting guy comes in, gives us. We've seen bullpen become more predominant the last couple of years. I think especially this year, it's a sprint. It's the first of 60 games. Hey, you give me 3 innings, you give me 2 innings, give me 4 innings. And the Rays are as good as any team in baseball at just cobbling together innings from a very good pitching staff.
Adnan Virk here on 95.7 The Game. What do you think a sprint of a season does to a young team like the Oakland A's, who might have used the first half to sort of figure it all out, especially with a very young pitching staff, but now they got to be good from jump street. Does that benefit them in any way? Too dumb and young to know any better, or what do you think of a team that won 97 games in back-to-back years? What kind of shot they got this year?
I think they're perennially underrated, as we can all agree. Everybody always forgets about the Oakland Athletics. Myself, I looked at the American League. I probably have them, maybe not even in the top five of teams I'm really expecting to see. I like the Yankees. I like the Astros. I like the Twins a lot because I think the Twins hit a ton of home runs. The ball always flies in the summer. Theoretically, we're playing in hot weather in July, August, and September. So I think the Twins, the Bombas squad can hit a ton. I already mentioned the Rays. So those are the four I like immediately out of the American League. And, yeah, people forget about the A's, who are just always that sleeping giant. Somehow their pitching works things out. They've got great position players and obviously real strength at first and third. And Marcus Semien's in the MVP conversation. The easy answer is I don't really know, because I think that a team like that, I generally feel like they need a little bit of time to coalesce. But yes, the optimist would say, hey, young and dumb, don't know any better. Let's just hit the ground running. And if you can be a streaky team, normally in baseball, it's a marathon. You want a team that is built with endurance, a team that can overcome attrition. Now you just want a streaky team. You want all those teams that can just string together a 6-7-8 game win streak and hopefully have more of those than 6-7-8 game losing streaks, because obviously in 60 games, there's really no margin for error.
What team is most likely to win 15?
Well, I think, you know, as much as I say it's wide open, I think it's more wide open this season than in years past. The two teams that I still cannot imagine them being contenders would be the Orioles and the Marlins. You know, the Orioles, Trey Mancini had a terrific season for them. He's their best offensive player. And I feel like people have forgotten, April 28th, diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. Like, this is serious stuff. And he was arguably their best player a season ago. So they don't have any pitching whatsoever that you can really get excited about. Not now, at least not for a year or two. And their offense, I mean, it's epitomized by the fact Chris gigantic contract. was an enormous underachiever a season ago. So the Orioles, I can't imagine a world in which they can be contenders. And the Marlins, especially in that division again, guys, look at the teams you're facing. So you got to face the defending champion of the Nationals. The Phillies stand to be better. I think the Mets are pretty good. So listen, you got three strong teams there for the Marlins. And listen, the Braves might win the division, by the way. I think the Braves might be the team to win the division, if not for the Nationals. I think the Marlins are for a tough row, and you're facing 10 games against your division opponent and then 5 games against your division counterpart, so the AL East for the NL East team. That means they're going to face the Yankees and the Rays and the Red Sox. I would take the Marlins as the team most likely to win 15.
And toward that end, if you start the season 2-10, how terrible will the rest of the year be knowing that you don't have time to come back?
Well, that's a good point, Ray, because, normally you say in a long season, you got to 2-10 start, hey, it's okay, we'll figure this out. Like, nobody really starts to pay attention to Memorial Day. We've all heard 1,000 times the Nationals were 19-31 after 50 games and yet went on to win the World Series. But in the past, if your team got off to a slow start and you said, that's okay, they'll hang in there, reinforcements are coming, wait till the trade deadline. Excuse me. Now you can't say that. You're going to go 2-10? Yeah, that's it. Okay, well, hey, look, there's LeBron James. Let me go watch the NBA playoffs or watch some hockey or whatever you're into. So, yes, a poor start will doom a team, whereas in the past you would feel like hope springs eternal.
What's reasonable expectations for Juan Soto? This guy was an absolute superstar at such a young age on the brightest stage. I feel like his encore season, it's going to be impressive to watch. But what do you think are reasonable expectations in even just a 60-game season?
It's a great point, because Soto's one of those young stars that, I think it's all the time now. We've kind of forgotten how great he is. It's too easy to quickly just think about Trout, Drouin, and Harper. Obviously, the great pitchers like Strasburg and especially Scherzer were so good for the Nationals. But Soto's as good as anybody, and he's an absolute superstar. You think of how talented he is, and that Mike Frazier even said, listen, we've given him 10 years, 180 tomorrow, but that probably won't get it done. He's going to be $250 million or $300 million. Who knows? Listen, the sky's the limit for a guy like Soto. What's interesting is this, to bring up Soto's name, is what are we looking at for a home run champion? Like, does anybody get 30 home runs? And again, to prorate that, think of how hard that would be over the course of 162. 30 and 60 is theoretically 80 and 162 or whatever arithmetic you want to use. So it's interesting. If Juan Soto can hit 30 home runs, which sounds like a lot, one every 2 days, he'll be the home run champion. More likely, Juan Soto could hit 25 home runs and be the home run champion. Like, I think a guy like him or Eugenio Suarez, he hits a ton of home runs. It'll be weird, guys. And that's one thing that I think you have to embrace. It's too easy to say, hey, this is weird that a guy with 25 home runs on the league. The other way to look at it is, we could have a guy hit 400. We could have a sub-1 ERA. Like, what if Jacob deGrom or Verlander or, any number of those guys has a Jack Flaherty, I think, is a dark horse pick of a great year for the Cardinals. Like, imagine a sub-1 ERA when you're only throwing 12 starts. So I think Soto definitely is going to have a great year, and I like the Nationals a lot.
Part of it would be amazing, and part of it would never be even worth talking about, and that's the problem with a 60-game season. The entire sport, my entire life, was set up to be a marathon. I think it's tough to sell me baseball as a sprint. But like you said, Adnan, here we go. Adnan Virk from DAZN joining us here on 95.7 The Game. I know you're a big, big, big movie buff. I would like my final baseball question asked to you in the form of a movie reference. So one of the best independent movies I've seen in a while was The Last Black Man in San Francisco, and I think the most powerful moment in the movie is when he's riding the bus and the two women are complaining about it, and he says, look, you can't hate it unless you love it. And he was talking about San Francisco. In a way, I feel that applies to baseball. I used to love baseball, and what we went through to get to this moment basically made me hate baseball. And I am so pissed off at the owners and their childish, greedy ways where they spent arguing over the cost of you. It basically 10 games is the cost of a utility infielder. And that's what we almost scuttled the entire season over. As someone who loves baseball, will you admit that you hate how we got here?
Let's start with a positive. Last Black Man in San Francisco was absolutely riveting. Joe Talbot, the director, was on my podcast, Cinephile, because I, like you, love that film, and I championed it when it came out last summer. I'm still more upset the fact it did not get any Academy Award recognition, did not get nominated for Best Cinematography. I mean, as you guys know, as San Francisco guys, you know, Joe was so smart in the way he filmed it. He not only had the trademark stuff that you always see, the landmark parts, you know, Crooked Street and the Bay Bridge and all the rest of it, but he showed a different side of San Francisco. I love that speech you're referring to. You know, you don't love it enough to hate it, but also the scene where he's getting screwed on the mortgage. He's basically saying, listen, you can screw me every way to Sunday here on the mortgage. I don't care. I just love this house. And that's a metaphor for loving something so much, it doesn't matter what's surrounding it. And yes, we can use that metaphor for baseball and how much I love it specifically. Listen, I give Rob Manfred credit for this, the commissioner. He did not mince words when discussing it. We've seen commissioners in the past try to obfuscate and say, well, listen, it was a less than ideal situation, but let's move on. You saw Roger Goodell talk about that, whether it was Ray Rice or Colin Kaepernick, et cetera. I give Rob credit for saying, listen, this was disgraceful. There's no doubt about it. There's no question that we have a lot of work to do here, that I'm completely cognizant of the fact that we upset fans. They have every right to be angered by the way that this dispute between owners and players was so public and so rancorous. It was certainly frustrating, and I echo your sentiments. It's certainly short-term. I think people have a right to say, listen, this could have been happening. Could have baseball July 4th. How nice would that have been? Baseball to have the grand stage themselves for a month before the NBA. Session on HBO, that's a tremendous show. I hope it wins all the Emmys. I always watch Better Call Saul. I'm good there. I binge-watched the Kaminsky Method, Michael Douglas. My wife roped me into Big Little Lies. At this point, I completely agree. I'm like, I'm good. I'd like some new, fresh content. It's hard because you have to start looking at VOD. Irresistible is a new Jon Stewart film starring Steve Carell. It's available on VOD, video on demand now. But as to your point, I looked at it tonight and I go, that's $20. Do I really want to spend $20 to watch this movie? Or can I go back in the archives? You know, last week on my podcast, Cinefly, I watched Casino. It's the 25th anniversary of Casino. I adore Scorsese more than anybody else. The Irishman was my favorite film of last year. Why don't I just watch Casino again? I'll probably feel better than spending $20 to watch Steve Carell's new movie. And a matter of fact, The King of Staten Island, which is one of the few new releases we've had this month, from the great Judd Apatow, the best thing he's ever done, ever will be, is not The 40-Year-Old Virgin, not Knocked Up, but The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling.
Yes.
My favorite comic ever. The Larry Sanders Show is my favorite comedy ever. I actually rewatched The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling. It's one of my favorite documentaries, and I love Shandling so much. All of which is to say, Apatow mailed it in big time with The King of Staten Island. It's a very disappointing comedy. Thank God I got a link sent to me. I don't think Pete Davidson is particularly funny. I know people appreciate him, millennials specifically. He spoke about mental illness. I know he dates a lot of hot women like Ariana Grande. He is not a movie star. I thought it was an incredibly boring 2-hour and 16-minute movie. So I'm with you. Let's not only get movies back and movie theaters back, but some good movies back. I can't wait for Christopher Nolan's Tenet, which was supposed to be in theaters July 17th. I'm sure you know the backstory. $200 million blockbuster. It's shot in 7 different countries. It stars Denzel's kid. They moved it back to July 31st, and now they moved it back to August 12th. A long way of saying we've got at least another 6 weeks of having to deal with a lot of mediocrity when it comes to movies that are out right now. Go back and do what I did. Watch some classics. They'll be better off for it.
Adnan Virk here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you very much. It was great talking with you. I do want to see Tenet, and I'll tell you, I don't know how much I want to go back to a movie theater, but that feels like the movie that's going to be begging you to see in a movie theater. That looks amazing. When we do, I mean, if we do have a world where we have direct to our couch releases, movie theaters are dead, are they not?
Yeah, and that's why I don't think it'll ever happen. And Nolan is one of those guys. I mean, like, he is the ultimate in the movie-going experience. He's like me. He's like Martin Scorsese. Like, there's certain people who go, I don't care. I just love going to the movies. I don't care if the whole world is going to have every streaming service and Apple TV and Hulu and Netflix and Amazon Prime. I still love going to the movies, and I always will. And Nolan is a big believer in film as a communal experience. And you're right. If ever there was a movie you have to watch in the theater, it looks like Tenet. And that's going to be a real touchstone. The reason they moved it back, by the way, is because of both of where we live, because California and New York basically said they're not opening their movie theaters July 15th. And he realized, listen, without New York and L.A., there's no way this film can make back some of the money we have to make with this kind of a budget. So if ever there is a movie that will gauge moviegoers' interest in returning to movies, it's going to be Tenet. And if there's not a lot of people going to see that in droves in August, that's a bad sign for the movie industry, at least this year with COVID-19 lurking.
Can I ask you one last housekeeping question? I know that you are now under contract with DAZN, a very interesting, like, step towards the future in sportscasting, being web-based and all of this. And then COVID-19 disrupts that, like all industries have been disrupted. How are you? How is the health of your new company? And are everyone going to be okay? Are we going to all make it through this? DAZN included?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, listen, they've been great to me. Obviously, my old boss, John Skipper, who I know well from ESPN, J.B. Horowitz and I were friends from ESPN. Josh Santry is a former agent with CAA, the company that represents me. So I've been in contact with all of them throughout this entire process, and there's no question it's been a challenge for everyone in our industry. Anybody who works in sports, whether it's you guys doing talk radio or myself being a part of a streaming service or working with MLB Network or my podcast or KBS13, everyone's taking a hit, but hopefully we'll be able to ride through it. The good thing for DAZN is internationally, we're very strong. We do great in Japan. We just signed a great new deal with the Bundesliga, which is the German soccer league in Germany. My home country, Canada, DAZN has NFL rights. They've got great rights for soccer as well, the English Premier League. So, and of course, domestically here in America, they got the boxing. So the good news is we've got Canelo Alvarez, we've got Gennady Golovkin. And of all the sports, boxing is the one that can actually withstand the pandemic. Because theoretically, you go, okay, hey, just test the fighters, test the trainers. And as you've seen with UFC and Dana White, let's go. No fans, but at least we'll get them in the ring again. So the good news for DAZN is with boxing, it's a fairly small group that you can control, and hopefully we'll get back to putting on great fights again.
Adnan Virk, thank you so much for joining us today. We expected to do like a 10-12 minute interview. We got a whole podcast out of it. Thanks so much.
I never shut up. Brevity is not my strength. Take care, boys. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well, of course, brevity's not his strength. He loved The Irishman, which if you start watching it now, you'll finish sometime before your next birthday. By the way, the movie is long, but it's not slow. So I'll give it that much. I liked The Irishman. I didn't love it. I liked it.
Ray, did you see it?
Yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, I didn't care much for it either. I mean, Casino and Goodfellas are so much better than The Irishman. I just didn't believe that however old Robert De Niro was supposed to be, he looked like a doddering old man trying to kick the guy on the side of the curb. It didn't ring true to me. I kind of felt bad for him, to be honest with you.
Oh, don't feel bad for Bobby. He's cashing those checks. He's doing fine. We haven't taken a single call today. It's time to open the lines and ask you this. If you had to be represented by a cardboard cutout at a Giants game, what would you want your cardboard cutout to be? Yes. Doesn't that sound like a good way to wrap up today's show? The San Francisco Giants getting a little creative. Ray will tell you, they've already had this over in Europe. Well, they got started faster in Europe. That's the only reason why. The Giants clearly would have had the idea first had it been on American soil. I'm just kidding. Alex Pavlovich says that the Giants have a fan cutout program that they're going to have here. According to an email sent by the team last night, season ticket holders can submit an image that will be placed in seats during home games, giving the appearance of at least that some of the seats are not empty. It is unclear if the program will extend beyond season ticket holders. I've had a few people say that the Giants are going to charge $90 for the cardboard cutout. I don't know if there's going to be some advertising element included. Why wouldn't there be? It sounds like I smell a way to make a buck, and the Giants have the best nose when it comes to smelling ways to make a buck. Now, we're not talking 42,000 heads on a stick like the set of PTI or anything like that. You would have cardboard cutout heads blowing from the top, you know, the upper deck all over the field everywhere. So I guess we're going to talk like it's going to be behind home plate and behind the dugout and for TV shots. What do you want on your cardboard cutout at Oracle Park this year? 888-957-9570. And we are brought to you by Radio.com. Make sure you go download Radio.com to your favorite laptop, device, app. That's the app you need, Radio.com. Favorite the station, 95.7 The Game, and take us with you no matter where you go. Butcher Boy in for Matt Kolsky this afternoon. We've got one segment left, and you're invited to be a part of it. 888-957-9570. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Oh, he dropped. I was going to ask, hey, good caller, what would you like your cardboard cutout to be since the San Francisco Giants are going to be asking season ticket holders to bring, submit a cardboard cutout that will, I guess, represent them in their, where are the seats going to be? The circle of wealth, I'm guessing. All the all the seats that would be in the TV shot, I'm guessing, is what we're looking to fill here. Not with sex dolls like over in Korea, but with actual cardboard cutouts. As I said earlier, I would like a little Patrick Swayze representation, possibly Dalton from Roadhouse. Barry Bonds has always made Giants games more interesting. How about a Barry Bonds cutout just to get him back in the ballpark? Ray, if we had to have a cutout represent you, what are you sending as your cutout?
Doug Stanhope.
Why Doug Stanhope?
Because he's the darkest, funniest comedian in America.
Have you ever seen him in person?
Times and, oh, yeah. Oh, he. It's must see. It's and strap in, because it isn't going to be a pleasant ride.
He is hysterical. I saw him a couple years ago at Cobb's, and he... I've never seen anyone get as drunk during a routine as he did. It was just, he was an A-plus offender of sensibilities all the way around. Very, very representative of you, Ray. It's a good choice. Doug Stanhope and you are a little bit of spirit animals. Indeed.
Well, I don't know if spirit animals is the way I'd want to go with that, but sure, why not?
Butcher Boy, who are you going with to represent you at a Giants game?
Well,
send a cardboard cutout of Kevin Barlow back in the day.
Well, I've thought about this long and hard. So if you're going to do this at Oracle Park, there are certain people that have to be represented. I need E40 behind home plate. I need a cardboard cutout of E40. Give me Huey Lewis to the right of him. Okay, I definitely want him. Give me the Warrior sweater lady that you see on the jumbo screen. I want her somewhere. And I want Crazy Legs, you know, the guy, the vendor that's always out there at AT&T Park, a.k.a. Oracle. I want him out there. And then there'd be me with a sign. And the sign would just say, sign Barry Bonds, restart the clock, build the statue, okay? Very simple, very easy. Obviously, I'm trying to say sign Barry Bonds, restart that Hall of Fame clock, and then build that darn statue out in left field. But, I mean, I'm sure there's other people in Bay Area lore that absolutely have to be there.
What do you think it would cost to have the Giants have Barry Bonds be their DH the rest of the season? What would Barry ask for? And by the way, I don't think there's a single dude in the entire organization who might be better suited for this. If you're telling me Barry Bonds just needed to take four cuts a game at his age right now, he might have the best shot of putting one in the water of anyone on the roster.
He does. He does. Here's the thing. Barry's lost a lot of weight, man. I ran into him, and he was up in, where was it? Somewhere in Marin, Sausalito, excuse me.
Told that bike riding.
He was bike riding like crazy. I almost didn't recognize him. Then he started talking. I knew right away it was Barry Bonds. I mean, he's just so distinctive with the cadence and everything. But, I mean, Damon, all he needs, 5 or 6 home runs over this 60-game stretch. I mean, restarts the clock. Now we got another 10 years to get him in the Hall of Fame. By then, A-Rod will be in. You know, Big Poppy will be in. Everybody will be in.
I didn't even think about that. And you said it. It didn't even register. Yeah, if he could take another AB right now,
his chances
of getting into Cooperstown get a lot better than Roger Clemens do they not?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, it would take all of the journalists, and I know I'm not one, but it would take all of the journalists, Ray, to actually vote him in. Do you think if we restarted the clock today, you think Bonds gets in?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because what we've seen from the membership is they've moved as much as they are on him and Clemens. And in 10 years, let's say he came out for one at bat at age 56, which is why this whole construct is frighteningly stupid. But since we're going to go along with it, he takes one at bat. Within 10 years, the writers aren't going to have the vote anymore. You know, Rob Manfred's going to see to it that goes to a select committee of friends and pals, all of whom will make sure that he stays out. He's not getting in. Drop that dream now. There's no chance.
Who would have more home runs, a 56-year-old Barry Bonds or however old Buster Posey is this year?
Posey. Bonds. Not even close.
Oh, right. Not even close.
56 years old. 56.
I don't care.
Right.
You cannot care all you want.
Buster Posey's still in the prime of his career, and he can't muscle 8 out of the room.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying Bonds can't muscle any out of the room anymore because he's 56. He's not getting around on a fastball anymore. People age. That's all I'm saying. People age. These guys don't live forever.
Posey has an older hip than Barry Bonds. His hip is 85. Okay, that's why it was replaced. Posey has
still
no
hit
pop
one
whatsoever.
Bonds will hit none, zero, not a chance.
Yeah. When he was the Marlin batting coach, Giancarlo Stanton said his batting practice was more impressive than 75% of the players. That's from Giancarlo Stanton, a current player. This was just 2 years ago, Ray.
He's not hitting any home runs. Stop it. Do yourself a favor. Have a good weekend. Don't think about this.
I'm just saying you're going to need to rent a kayak to get all those balls out in McCovey Cove. Barry could still get it done. How about this? If Barry Bonds played a 60-game season and you're setting the over-under home run total for Barry Bonds at a half, I'm taking the over, Ray.
Okay.
I'm taking the over. How about this?
I'm going to put money on the fact that a guy who hasn't swung a bat in anger in forever and is 56 years old and he's facing guys who throw 100 routinely, he's not hitting any home runs. And he is, without question, one of the two greatest hitters of all time. That's not in dispute. But everybody gets old at some point, and you've got to give up the dream.
Even Jim Barnett is crushing people in one-on-one hoops. I mean, he's legendary for this. Rick Barry hitting 350-yard drives, beating people in tennis. Some people are just born with God-given talents, Ray, that even God himself can't even explain. I think Barry's one of those individuals. And to your point, look, at 43 years old, on one knee, okay, on one knee, weighing a lot more than he does now, that guy hit 28 jacks in a season, a shortened season. And you know what? That leads the San Francisco Giants since his retirement 13 years ago. Yeah, the guy stinks. Can't hit a home run. Can't hit
God,
one
has
in 60
been
games.
13 years since Barry
2007?
Bonds? God almighty. We're getting old. How about this? Ray, man, I got to give it to you. You're not right often, but when you are, you do hit a bullseye. Remember 2 months ago how you said everything that the NBA was going to do, they were going to do for Zion? I think we got proof that you were right. Six of the Pelicans' eight seeding games opponents will be against Memphis, Sacramento twice, Washington, San Antonio, and Orlando. In other words, the NBA is trying to schedule a Zion versus LeBron and the Lakers first-round matchup for the playoffs. There is no doubt about that. If you look at what the Pelicans had the season not been suspended, 15 of the Pelicans' 18 remaining games were against teams with losing records, so you could say that their percentage actually went down. But knowing that the NBA was going to manipulate the schedule to get them in, they certainly did. They didn't put a single roadblock in front of the Pelicans and a real shot to be the eighth seed.
Well, no, but they didn't have a choice. What they did was they took the end of the season, took out the teams that weren't playing anymore, and gave them what was left. So in that way, if you want to say they seeded it for them, they seeded it for him when they made the original schedule. So they, as much as I'd like to say they really are fixing this for him, if you want to say they're fixing it for him, they fixed it for him back last summer. And the truth is, everybody had said all along that the Pelicans had the best chance of catching Memphis because they had the easiest schedule. So actually, it got minimally harder. But their schedule is still simple. Is still easy.
There's no doubt what the NBA wants. There's no doubt what the NBA wants. They want that Zion. Look, Zion is a ratings gold mine. Yes. There's no doubt. Cool. It's not the Pelicans. It's one man. And this is where I would like to talk about the rule of share for just a moment here. When you're so famous that one name can represent you, it is time for the NBA to allow a level of fame that is usually reserved for Brazilian soccer players only. It can't be forced, by the way. It cannot be forced. It must be natural. But I think that from now on, the NBA, instead of on the back of his jersey, instead of Williams, it should say Zion. When a player really becomes that big, you should be able to go to just one name. Like on the back of LeBron's jersey, it should say LeBron, not James. It should just say LeBron. Zion should say Zion.
Kobe.
Kobe should have said, absolutely, Kobe.
If they didn't do it for Kobe, and they didn't do it for Shaq, and they didn't do it for Jordan, and they didn't do it for Russell, well, they never had to do it for Russell because they didn't have names on the back then.
Didn't they do ABA, Pistol Pete? Wasn't that on the back of his jersey for those Hawks jerseys, Ray? Or am I?
Yeah, for like two games, and then the league told him to put Maravich on.
Right.
Gotcha.
Well, I mean, they have had nickname games in the NBA where guys got their Twitter handles on the back of their jersey. I'm just thinking there are a few select players, you know, where you reach Swaggy. That level of fame where, oh, Madonna. Okay. Like Carmelo Anthony. He could have had Carmelo on the back of his jersey or just Mello. It would have been great.
Hello.
It would have been great. I mean, if it works for Brazilian soccer players, it could work in the NBA too. And oh, by the way, I'm just selling more jerseys. That's all I'm doing. Everyone who had a Kobe Bryant, everyone who wanted a Kobe Bryant had a Kobe Bryant jersey. What if all of a sudden now it says Kobe, you need to go get a new one. You know what I mean? Like it could have been a more of an opportunity for sales.
Are we going to like lump in all of the initial guys too? AD, KD, are we putting those guys in
no.
there as well?
No.
PG-13?
No.
That's got, where you draw the line?
Yeah, no. Can't be initials.
No unless alphanumeric license plates for you, huh, on the back
now,
of these
here's
jerseys.
The thing. Unless it's Kevin Garnett. Like, Garnett was KG enough to be KG. Anthony Davis isn't so universally referred to as AD where that applies. That's still Davis.
What about Kelly Oubre? Maybe the greatest nickname in all of sports, Tsunami Poppy.
That's the greatest nickname in all sports?
I mean, it's up there.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's
Tsunami
good.
Poppy?
It's not a flying Hawaiian, but it's pretty good.
Look at it this way. That is such a great nickname. This is the first time I've ever even heard of it.
You're welcome.
Can't be that great of a nickname if I'm finding out about it at 5:45 in the middle of a pandemic.
Brutal. Just brutal.
Tom Brady. Let's wrap up with this here, fellas. Because I don't want to do a lot of shaming here. But Tom Brady sort of set himself up for it. So for 2 days this week, Tom Brady's practiced with the Buccaneers, his new teammates down in Florida where the coronavirus cases are skyrocketing. We've been talking about that all day. On Instagram, first, there was a picture of him and Gronk, and he said, no excuses. Now, say what you want. What does no excuses mean? You could say that, you know, the NFLPA recommending that players not get together for workouts was a bad idea, and he's saying there's no excuses. That would be an excuse to not practice, so we're not going to do that. Then he did the exact same thing yesterday, except this time he quoted Franklin Roosevelt saying the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. So the NFLPA medical director recommended to players not to practice in groups. So I ask you this. If the players aren't going to be listening to the guy that they pay to be the medical director of their own union, who will they listen to? They're not going to listen to anybody. And by the way, it's not just Tom Brady here, even though he might be fanning the flames the most with his little, let me tell you about fighting the power with my little quotes from my workouts. Russell Wilson is putting videos of him throwing to Metcalf on Twitter. 49ers players went Camp worked J. out in a group so well that somebody's already got COVID. Like, guys seem unbothered by their own union's medical director's concern. So at some point, if the kids want to play in traffic, I guess they want to get hit by a bus. Like, I don't know what to tell you here. Like, it's one thing to say, I'm not going to pay attention to that guy. That guy's fake news. You are paying this person to be your medical director. The guy you're paying to be your medical director is like, eh, you probably shouldn't do this. And you go out and you do it anyways. And how about this? If you got to go do it, don't put it on the internet. Could we have a moment of discretion in 2020? Would it be possible that you guys would go out and throw the football in the name of actual practice and getting better, not for the Instagram likes and the retweets? Why can't these guys just go work out without filming it? I don't understand. What the hell is wrong with these guys?
Oh, because they all want to review what they've done that day. I mean, just, I mean, it's narcissism. It's, you know, self-involvement. It's all of it, you know, just wearying of it. You know, he's Tom Brady's bulletproof, you know. I mean, and he's doing this in Florida, you know. Who wants to be more at risk?
Well,
the state of Florida?
Them. And let's not forget, you're talking about, you know, ignoring his own team officials. This is the same guy who brought Guerrero into the Patriots locker room when he was told not to bring this guy. So Brady does what he wants. And Guerrero, I'm assuming, is somewhere off to the side of whatever that Instagram video is. Because he's never too far behind Brady.
TB12, strawberries are inflammatory. Look out, everyone.
Avocado ice cream, Damon. I mean, it's all the rage. Go to Mitchell's and get it now.
The dumbest thing that I heard this week, I'm almost glad that I wasn't on the air yesterday. I don't know if you guys got into this the day before, maybe. The way that Kyle Shanahan is talking about the goal next year, it sounds good to me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.